Hi, my name is Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. This episode was recorded on Tuesday, December 26, 2017, starting just after 3 p.m., actually at 3:08 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, and this is the 138th episode of the show. For more information about how to subscribe to the podcast and help support the production of future episodes by becoming a patron, please visit theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe. In this episode, I'm going to be talking with Kelly Surtees and Austin Kopic about the forecast for the year of 2018, and we're going to be looking at some of the major planetary alignments that will occur over the course of the next 12 months. So Austin and Kelly, welcome back to the show once again.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. I can't believe it's been a year since we did our last forecast episode. 2017 has blown by, and now it is time to do another 12 months. So you guys have both been busy because you guys both write columns and like you have all sorts of things that you've done already looking at the forecast for next year, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Like Kelly, I think Kelly, you wrote like a whole magazine back in June or something, right?
Yeah, I write annual horoscopes for an Australian magazine. I'd meant to bring a copy down. Anyway, and yeah, we do it early. So I'll actually be studying 2019 very early in 2018. So yeah, I've got lots but I've been working with clients over the last month. I've had a couple of clients that wanted these broad overviews of 2018. So it's been nice to dive back into it. It's good prep.
Brilliant. And Austin, you've been doing like an almanac for years where you basically do the same thing, right?
Well, I used to do it in a book form, and then I moved it online about 2 years ago. And so I provide more than I provided in the written form, but it comes out, you know, throughout the year. But yeah, I deal with every day. I do months. I do essays on things like Saturn and Capricorn. And I switched from doing a weekly column to a decanly column. So every 10-day column with horoscopes. And I spent the first half of this month pretty much just thinking about Saturn and Capricorn all day, every day. And then since then, it's been 2018 all day, every day. So yeah, I've got some thoughts.
Yes, I think that's most astrologers over the past few weeks, intensely focused on the ingress of Saturn into Capricorn. And now here we are at the end of the year, so we actually have to look at what the other planets are doing. So this is actually the first year, aside from doing the forecast episodes, where I've actually had to do the same process you guys did, because I am going to be releasing in the next week, right about the time that we release this podcast episode this Friday, two astrology calendars where I'm actually branching out and I'm going to be trying to publish a couple of calendars. One of them is there's a large version of the one you see behind me, which is a 2018 calendar that shows the zodiac and shows the movement of all the planets and their retrograde cycles during the course of the year at a glance. And that's something I made with Paula Bellomini from Brazil, and we're releasing it on Friday. And then also recently I partnered with Kirk Kahn, who does the Planet Watcher calendar. And we partnered up this year in order to do that together. And I just got done putting together all of the planetary alignments for that for 2018 and actually looking at every single ingress and lunation and everything else, which I had never done before. And it was quite a thing. So this is a, you know, preview of that's from 2017. And doing that process and going through and looking at every single alignment, I actually have a lot more respect for what you guys go through like every year when you do these, which is this very painstaking process of looking at every possible alignment over the course of the next 12 months on a like daily basis, right? Do you guys always go through day by day, or how do you approach it? Kelly, you go through every single day?
Yeah, I take a top-down approach. So I tend to start with what are the bigger aspects, you know, what are Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Pluto doing? Then how is Mars triggering into that? What is the sun doing? Where are the eclipses? You know, what's changing signs when? So I don't know. I was thinking as you were saying that, Chris, I was like, maybe that's our Saturn in Virgos, Austin and I, because it's a very methodical process to gather all the data. And then once you've gathered all the data, you kind of have to sit with it. You know, so before I start writing year ahead horoscopes, I want to just reflect on, okay, this is happening. What is that going to feel like? What is that going to look like? How might that show up? Not just collectively, because when you're writing horoscopes, you're really writing for the individual. So what will this look like in a person's life? So it's definitely, I call, you know, the prep for writing horoscopes, for instance, I call it like playing your scales. If you're a musician, you have to do these more rote things to keep you in the flow, to keep that intuition and that interpretive energy high. You've got to be doing this day-to-day groundwork. I don't know if you think about it similarly, Austin, or different, but it is that labor, which I love, that prepares for the future.
Yeah, my process is really similar. Sometimes it ends up different, but that's generally, generally start with the big stuff. And then I think I ended up, just so I don't miss key moments, I think I ended up going through and looking at every day of the year using Planet Watcher, the visual ephemeris. I think I did that twice just to make sure I didn't miss anything. You know, it's like Kelly said, you've got, oh, it's Saturn in Capricorn. That's a big deal. But what configurations is there something in June that activates that I maybe wouldn't have thought of, just knowing that a planet's in a sign, et cetera, et cetera. I guess the only thing I would add, and you probably have a similar experience, Kelly, is there's the data harvesting, and then I just have to sit with it until it's almost like, here are 1,000 seeds. And you're like, this is a cherry tree seed. And I think I know what cherry trees are like, but like, I can't imagine what the entirety of the garden looks like immediately. I have to just kind of plant them all. And then after a week or so of pain, it grows in my head and I can see, I'm like, oh, okay, that's how it all looks together. And that takes a while. Like that's the headache part for me.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the marinating part, and that you can't rush that process, basically.
Yeah, and then it's interesting also doing these with you guys each year, seeing how those transits actually play out and grow and how some of those seeds of those planetary transits actually turn into events, sometimes like worldwide events or other times much more personal events during the course of a year, especially when it's something that you saw coming like a year or a year and a half ahead of time, or sometimes 2 years ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. No, I think when you spend that much time looking at things ahead, early, ahead of time, you get, even if it's something that looks particularly horrific, you're like, let's get over it. Come on. What's it going to be? What's it actually going to be? Come on. Like, let's just do this. I don't want to think about, I don't want to just be like, okay, next month. Like, I was really excited for the eclipse to actually happen, the Great American Eclipse to actually happen. I was like, all right, we've all said way too many things about it. Let's just see how it goes.
Yeah, because everybody started freaking out about it once it started getting close, but it's like astrologers have been paying attention to that for like a year or two ahead of time. We knew that was coming up. So in terms of the calendar, somebody in the chat room here that's attending the live episode said, when will it be available and where? So I'm just going to share my screen really quickly because I already have the promo page up, and you can find out more information about the posters at theastrologypodcast.com/2018poster. And there I'm selling the 2018 planetary movements and retrogrades poster, which is the round calendar. And I'm also going to be selling the Planet Watcher calendar, which we just finished. We're trying to finalize the design right now. I don't know if I share this. Can you see the Planet Watcher calendar here? Or is it still showing the other one?
I can see the planetary movements calendar.
Okay, try this. So this is not the final version, but this is pretty close to what the final version of the Planet Watcher calendar will look like. More or less, we're almost there. So literally just finished this last night. There's like 100, entries in each of those, but it was fun to do. And it gave me a new perspective on, just that process and that process you guys have been going through for years now. So theastrologypodcast.com/2018poster. I'm going to start shipping them this weekend. This is kind of an experiment because I've never done posters before, but I'm excited about it because they came out super, super well. Here's a little one. It's about that size.
Chris, can you hold that back up again for just a second? I just wanted to say,
hold it up again because it's gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, and what I wanted to say is the way that you've done the retrograde movement, the ground that those planets will cover over the year, that's something I've been sketching on the outside of natal charts for like 5, 6, 7, 8 years. I don't even remember when I started doing it, but that's,
This is my 2018 prep. This is the page I do to prep for horoscopes. And it's not as beautiful as yours, Chris, but same concept. You need to see it visually.
Yeah. And that's what I was going for there, because then you can kind of visualize your own chart and what your rising sign is, and then what planets are going to go retrograde in what houses and oversensitive points and so on and so forth. So this year we're going to package the Planet Watcher and that calendar together, which is exciting. I'm going to do all the direct sales myself and shipping myself, which I can only do in the US. So initially for the first few weeks, it's only available in the US, but then I'm going to expand it later to Canada and Mexico, and then eventually to worldwide over the course of the next few weeks. So just pay attention to that page on the Astrology Podcast or email me for more information. And you should have a poster soon. All right. So other news and announcements before we get into the full forecast this year. So we've got a few giveaway prizes this month to patrons of the Astrology Podcast, since every month we do giveaway prizes to people who support the show, especially on the $5 and $10 tiers. There's three primary things I'm giving away. Three things are books, actually. One of the books is The Greatness of Saturn, which ties in with a talk, an episode we did earlier this month where I talked a bit about Sati Sati on an earlier episode. Austin, have you read this one?
The Greatness of Saturn. No, I'm aware of it. And I know the outline of the story, but I haven't sat down to read it yet.
Yeah, really good book from an Indian astrological perspective, but about Saturn transits and this theme that we talked about of finding compassion or developing compassion through suffering or through challenge yourself. It's a really good book. So that's a good one for a lot of those people that are beginning important Saturn transits now, with Saturn going into Capricorn. Another book I'm going to give away this month is The Gods of Change by Howard Sisportis, which has recently been reprinted sometime in the past few years by Wessex Astrologer. It's like a classic book on the outer planets, which I thought would be good for some of those people who are having some heavy outer planet transits and changes over the course of this year, with Uranus changing signs, for example. I don't know, Kelly, have you read that one, The Gods of Change?
I highly recommend it for anyone wanting to understand out of planet transits. It was out of print for a while and now it's back in print. So that's a great one to give away, as is this one, which I'm reading as an ode to Saturn.
Oh, you already have it. Okay.
Based on him coming into Capricorn.
Awesome. Good. Yep. You have both of the books I'm giving away. And then the third book I'm giving away is a copy of my new book that came out earlier this year, Hellenistic Astrology, The Study of Fate and Fortune, which I've talked all about on previous podcast episodes, so I don't need to go into it here. But those are our three giveaway books this month. And then finally, the other giveaway is actually a piece of software where there's a new astrology software program out called Bindu Astrology Software. And this software, it specializes in Jyotish or in Indian astrology or Vedic astrology, depending on what you want to call it. But it also integrates some Western and medieval components. So apparently this is a partnership with Cosmic Patterns, who makes Sirius and Kepler software, and they've decided to develop this new program, and it's actually pretty cool. So you can find out more information about that at binduastrology.com, and we're going to be giving away two free copies of that to patrons of the Astrology Podcast. And I know, Austin, you've been getting much more into Vedic astrology recently, right?
Yeah, I've actually have on my to-do list buy good Jyotish software by the end of the fiscal year, so I can write it off.
Right. Yeah. Good time of the year to be doing that. Well, I'll definitely send you a link to this at,
please do.
I guess it's just binduastrology.com, and you can check it out. Other news and announcements. So the big one this year, of course, is the United Astrology Conference is happening in Chicago in May, right at the end of May of 2018. All three of us are giving talks there and are going to be at that conference. I'm actually doing a post-conference workshop on Hellenistic timing techniques. And we're also going to do a meetup for members or for listeners of the podcast at some point during the course of the conference as well, with details to be announced soon. So it's a really big deal. I'd recommend everybody attend this conference because it's basically the conference, astrology conference of the decade. And I did want to let people know that there's a bunch of scholarships that are going to be available here in the next few weeks for people that need some financial help going to UAC. There's the ability to potentially get a scholarship in order to pay part of your tuition for attending the conference. So UAC itself is giving out 12 scholarships, and you can get more information about that at uacastrology.com/registration/scholarship. The deadline to apply is February 1st, and the winners are going to be announced by March 1st. The other sponsoring organizations, the astrology, basically organizations that are putting on UAC, are also each going to be offering their own scholarships. So I would recommend signing up for a membership for one of these astrology groups or multiple astrology groups, and then applying for a scholarship. Because what one thing people don't know is usually not very many people at all apply for scholarships, and it usually just ends up going to like whoever applied at that point. So people often think there must be tons of people applying and there's no need to, when in reality it's the exact opposite. So anybody that wants a scholarship or where that would help you get to the conference, I would seriously consider applying through one of those avenues, and you have a pretty good shot of getting it. All right. Any other news and announcements before we move in? Do you guys have anything you want to say about stuff you have coming up over the next year?
I'll have online classes ongoing throughout 2018, details of which will be on my website. And at the very end of 2018, I'll be releasing my 2019 moon calendar, which I'm doing for the first time in a wall calendar hang format. So month by month with, you know, beautiful image, info about the new and full moon, and some astro data for the month. So that will come out at the end of 2018. So stay tuned for that. What about you, Austin?
Oh, I'm also going to be teaching. I'm going to be doing, you know, fundamentals classes and intermediate classes. And then I'm going to do a bunch of, I don't know, I've been teaching a lot of the same deep nuts and bolts stuff for several years. And I'm still going to do that this year, but I'm going to do a bunch of more fun experimental stuff I haven't taught before. I'm going to do several astrological magic courses. And I think I'm going to do more just like one-off webinars on specific topics. I kind of want to get more experimental. And my 2018 teaching calendar will be up on my website, hopefully very soon. I still have to make some decisions about where things go and if I'm going to do that or not. That makes sense.
All right.
And
sounds good.
We'll all be at UAC. We'll all be speaking at UAC.
Yeah, yes. I'm really excited to see you guys there and to meet, you know, we usually go to like smaller conferences and like we meet a ton of podcast listeners at those. So I have no idea what UAC is going to be like. I think it's going to be a little insane.
That's kind of the point of UAC. I mean, for people who don't know, like it's not just another conference. It's like thousands of astrologers from around the world crammed into one hotel for a week. It's irreplaceable.
Yeah, and somebody was asking on Twitter the other day, they were like, I'm 80%, you know, committed to going to UAC. What's the last thing to push me over for the other 20%? And one of the things I said, I don't know if it's a little dark, but it's like, you know, this is probably going to be the last UAC where you have the opportunity to meet some older astrologers who have had a major impact on the field over the past 30 or 40 years, and to actually meet them in person or attend one of their lectures or, you know, thank them for their work or shake their hand or something like that, actually in person, you know, all in one place, where we're talking about hundreds of these very influential, famous astrologers at this conference from all over the world. And, you know, some of them are not necessarily going to be around by the time of the next UAC, whenever that is. So the last one was in 2012, and this one's taking place in 2018. So that's 6 years ago at this point. And yeah, so that's, to me, that's a good reason, I think, where this is not only the conference, the largest conference of the decade, but it's for some of these, you know, very prominent astrologers going to be the last chance you could get to meet them.
Yeah, that's a grim but fair note. I mean, and it's not like everybody's going to be gone, but, you know, if it's 4 to 6 years, you know, somebody will be missing. Somebody you'll be sad you've missed.
Yeah, and the only thing that made me think about that was just that they were gathering names for they do a thing sometimes of a memorial of like astrologers we've lost since the last UAC. And I was surprised when I saw some of the names on that list, how many there were since the last time.
Absolutely. And if I was just going to say, if they're not gone, they may not be in a position to travel. After I went to my first UAC, which was in 2008, I came back, and what I used to say to people was, beg, borrow, or steal. If you're into astrology, you have to get to a UAC conference at some point. There is nothing, it's indescribable. It's hard to put into words the feeling of being in the same building with 1,000 other, or even more, you know, by the time you add the speakers and everything in, 1,000 other astrologers. You know, what we do is kind of weird, and it's not something that you can go to a mainstream university for. And the feeling I had was like, oh my God, this is my tribe. These are people who are into the same things I do. And there's a lot of them. And that gave me a huge kind of boost in confidence. So it's, if you're committed to astrology, if astrology is something you're genuinely passionate about, whether you want to make it your full-time work or it's a passionate hobby that you have, the UAC experience is, it's a once in a lifetime for many people, but it is worth it. So yeah, hopefully we're all convincing you. If you're on the fence, to come on over, book your ticket and see us and many, many other very well-known successful astrologers there.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't even like people and I thought it was great.
Right. Yeah. All right. I think if anyone was not convinced now, they're convinced. And if they need any more convincing, they're probably beyond hope. So people can find out more information about that conference at uacastrology.com. We keep using the acronym, but it's called the United Astrology Conference 2018. So yeah, I hope to see you there. And so why don't we move on to the focus of this episode, which is the forecast for 2018. So Austin, we were talking a little bit before, and you were talking about maybe doing sort of an overview or a preview of some of the main themes at first, and then breaking it down into quarters, into the four quarters of the year. Does that sound like a good approach?
Yeah, I think the chances of getting lost in one detail or another are way too high if we don't have a guiding structure like that. And this year also is particularly easy to break down into quarters. It sort of breaks itself down with some of the configurations.
Right.
So can we start with Saturn in Capricorn?
That is the elephant in the room, is Saturn has recently left after...
Or the pair of gray golf shirts in the room.
Right.
I thought that was hilarious.
For those who are just listening, Chris and I both independently decided to wear gray golf shirts. Note, this is, I think, the second time I've worn a golf shirt in 20 years. So Saturn, you know, Saturn commands, we obey.
Right. And it's the only thing that I wear because the lighting, it's the only thing that works with the lighting in here. But I appreciate the symbolism there. So Saturn in Capricorn, we've just finished a 3-year transit of Saturn through Sagittarius. We've been talking about that one pretty much ever since we've been doing the forecast episode. So it feels weird to finally now be moving on to a new 3-year long transit. And this is going to last for a full 3 years, right? It ingressed just a few days ago in December of 2017. And it's going to stay there until... what, December of 2020?
Yeah, it's in and out during 2020, but
it's
but
in
the,
and
the
out.
Final
yeah.
ingress or the final egress from Capricorn and into Aquarius isn't until December of 2020. So that's it's a whole lot of Saturn in Capricorn. And I'm glad that you're bringing it up in a 3-year context because one, Saturn likes long-term thinking. For those of you who weren't paying as much attention to astrology and say the beginning of 2015, if you look at the Saturn in Sagittarius themes, which began in 2015, and how in some ways, completely literally and logically they played out over 15, 16, 17, you have a chance now to get to know Saturn in Capricorn and to be able, and to set reasonable and useful expectations for what 3 years are going to be about. You know, getting to know an outer, slower moving planet sooner rather than later allows you to adapt to it and to structure your actions and set your expectations so that you're working with that. And so, you're not surprised.
Yeah, definitely. And, that was a good point. You pointed out how literal many of the Saturn and Sagittarius manifestations were, which is just wild for all of us to see over the course of the past two or three years, oftentimes in a not very good way. And that's one of the things that is really now has heightened my interest in this transit, because theoretically with Saturn going through Capricorn, which is the sign that it rules and the primary sign that it's associated with in pretty much all traditions of astrology, we would expect to see a much more pure and sort of literal manifestation of Saturn over the course of the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, I'm already seeing it and feeling it. Let me start by saying something nice about Saturn in Capricorn. So one of the things that I just saw over this last week with a bunch of people is this credit where credit is due phenomenon. People who've been like laboring long and hard and maybe in part unthanked for years are like, I've seen numerous people just getting the accolades that they probably earned 5 years ago, but they're finally like, that's getting delivered. You know, one of the ways that you talk about Saturn, Chris, that I really like is how Saturn can confirm, right? That sometimes Saturn gives you the nod, the big stamp of approval from what you've already been doing, right? And so it's not like, even though, it's not like getting something for free, it sure is nice to get your back pay for work you've already done, whether that's, you know, being paid in love and admiration or money or, you know, or whatever. But that there's that sort of confirmation like, yep, you done good, kid. You know, and I've just been seeing that. And that was nice to see. Right. It's not all cold stone prisons. It's that, too. But it is like, no, you've earned it. You have earned it. Confirm.
Right. If you have earned it, then it is sort of confirmed or delivered at that time.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you may not realize how much you've earned. You know, sometimes we just get into the groove of, no, this is what I do. And I'm not doing it for, you know, for praise or, you know, the big paycheck or whatever. And sometimes you forget that maybe that's more impressive than than you realize. I've seen that happen like three or four people like within 2 days of the ingress. And I was like, oh, that's nice. And that's so, it's so Saturnian. You know, I thought that the sun's solstice conjunction with Saturn only a few days after the ingress, I think made some qualities of the ingress of Saturn and Capricorn a little bit more clear, a little bit more quickly than they might have otherwise been.
Yeah, definitely. Here I'm throwing that up on the screen for those watching the video version of this, that sun-Saturn conjunction that happened pretty much right after the Saturn ingress when we had the winter solstice basically in the Northern Hemisphere. And Kelly, what are some of the main themes that you are really focused on in terms of Saturn and Capricorn?
Yeah, look, I love the thread that you guys are talking about there, that idea of confirmation, because I do think with Saturn, I always describe Saturn as like the rewards or consequences that you get acknowledgement for what's been done. Saturn rewards diligence. He rewards consistency. He rewards thoroughness. And I think one of the lovely things that you've identified there, Austin, is the idea that Saturn is really like the essence of Saturn. It's about getting on with what needs to be done. And it's that quiet getting on with it that is often overlooked. And it's lovely to see those examples, I guess, as you're saying, Austin, where that quiet getting on with it is now getting the acknowledgement it deserves. Because I do think, you know, Saturn in Capricorn particularly, there's a solidness to this. It's sort of this double earth, or, you know, if you look at the temperamental qualities, it's a double cold, double dry combination, because the planet's qualities are congruent with or the same as the sign's qualities. So we're getting this real sense of that plotting energy, but how that creates the foundation. And I think the idea of slowing down to, and I think internally confirming, what can we be responsible for? How do we want to respond to what's going on around us? The internal confirmation, I think, is perhaps just as important as that external acknowledgement. But you do always see, I noticed this with Saturn transits for clients, that whatever wisdom or authority or experience you have collected, perhaps without being aware of it, when you have a significant Saturn transit, it comes to you that others recognize that wisdom and that strength and that authority within you. So there's no false prophets here with Saturn in Capricorn, but people that are solid and substantial start to get the acknowledgement and the recognition that they deserve.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Or
I don't know.
In some instances,
there's so much to say about this, but yeah.
In some instances, the opposite, where we have started to see, I mean, some of this started happening, of course, after Jupiter went into Scorpio, and some of the scandals started being, there was this huge like disclosure of a lot of these scandals. But now it seems part of with Saturn and Capricorn is this almost like retribution phase, where we're seeing some of the people, especially with heavy Capricorn placements. Like I've seen some of the people who were accused, like, you know, Kevin Spacey, for example, who has Saturn in early Capricorn And there was this huge movie that was just released this month that he was literally replaced from as the head of, he was like the star of the movie, and they replaced him over the course of a month and reshot all of his scenes with a different actor, in sort of, again, using that keyword of sort of like retribution or, yeah, sort of the effects of something that he had done earlier in his life.
Yeah, well, I think that, and that I'm really glad you brought up that side of it. I think there these two different outcomes are very much the result of the same process, and that's being judged. You know, you can be judged, and people will be like, we've looked over, you know, if you're at the country fair and you've entered your pig, right? They'll judge your pig, and they might they might judge that to be the finest pig in the land, or they might judge you to be a negligent owner and your pig unfit for human eyes. But it's that result of judgment, like, you know, evaluation and then confirm or deny.
Right. Judgment, but also like penalty, and this idea of like penalty and rewards seems like this theme that we're already coming back to a few times here.
Yeah.
The idea of consequences, you know, I think we've said before with Saturn, there's no free lunches. You get what you've earned. And if what you've earned is, you know, a punishment because your actions don't stand up to the judgment, then the consequences or the, you know, the chickens come home to roost at this point. And I do think that's interesting that we're going into, you know, one thing I always think about with Saturn transits, you know, we have different flavors or different iterations of Saturn in the 3-year period based on the sign Jupiter's in for that time frame. And this first Saturn in Capricorn cycle, we've got Jupiter in Scorpio. So it is just bringing up that.
Right, definitely. So, and that's, you know, in order to keep this moving in terms of talking about, you know, giving a sort of brief overview of some of the major themes, Jupiter in Scorpio is the other major one that we're going to be dealing with most of the year, right?
Yeah, I would like to say one more thing about Saturn in Capricorn as it relates to this year. This is following up on what Kelly was saying about it being double cold and dry. Saturn in Capricorn is this earthy anchor that that's just going to, it's going to be pulling things back down to Earth all year round. You know, there's a strong gravitational field. and that'll be really good for some people. That'll be bad for other people, but, it's going to be virtually impossible to get, to get into those sort of light, fiery excitement, outrage sort of storms that we had during Saturn and Sagittarius. There's something inherently ungrounded about that. But Saturn and Capricorn is always going to want to bring things down to facts. And that's different than what we've had. Mm-hmm. And it's an important weight. You know, it's like putting an extra 200 pounds on the ship of the year.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And in terms of, so are there other like overview type things that we should touch on? I mean, I know you're in your outline, it was like Saturn and Scorpio, Saturn and Capricorn, Jupiter and Scorpio. Uranus, of course, is like a huge, huge player this year when it shifts signs and makes its first ingress into Taurus about halfway through the year, right?
Yeah, it's a third of the way. Yeah.
May.
Okay. And then
do we want to touch on that now or in the quarter?
I'd prefer to do it in the quarter, but I'm flexible.
Okay. In that case, let me run through the rest of them really quickly. So Uranus in and out of Taurus, going back and forth between Taurus and Aries for much of the year. We have a continuation of the Aquarius Leo eclipses. And we actually, this is an issue I ran into with the Planet Watcher calendar, where we start getting close to that shifting into the Cancer Capricorn axis, the next set of signs, and we get our first eclipse, I think, in Cancer. It's like 15 degrees off the nodes, but it's just barely sort of within that range. I don't know if you guys consider that an eclipse or if you think it's too far off. What do you think, Austin?
How should we say? It's the shadow of an eclipse's shadow. I think there will be some hints. There'll be a little bit of teaser trailer for the next cycle of eclipses, which are Cancer Capricorn. But considering that that ever so slight, I don't even think it'll be visible to the naked eye, Cancer eclipse will be followed by the most dramatic eclipse of the year, which will be seen by billions, which I, for me, is like my single configuration sort of highlight for the year. Instead of a solar eclipse like we had in 2017, we're going to have a big old lunar. And so I think that's going to rather overshadow the shadow of a shadow of the little tiny, you know, pseudo Cancer eclipse, which doesn't mean it's not real. It just, you know, I think in terms of what people will notice and what will move events and news, I think it's, I think we're solidly in the Leo Aquarius.
Definitely. Yeah. And a continuation of some of that.
Agreed. Yeah.
And really that was one of the few things that I wanted to mention in retrospect about 2017 is like so much of the focus of most astrologers, you know, was that eclipse that occurred in the solar eclipse that occurred in Leo last summer, and the fact that it went across the entire United States and then occurred right on the ascendant or somewhere very close to the ascendant of, you know, Donald Trump. A lot of people were very much a lot of astrologers were very much focused on that relating directly to him and some sort of event or something perhaps taking place either that was personally relevant to him or the country as a whole. But it seemed like a lot of what that ended up being was just much more simply, almost like a marker that he was the president at that time or would be president at that time. And that so much of the focus would be on him and his sort of personality and that the sort of effect that that was having on the country as a whole, you know, whether for better or worse, or whether you like him or hate him, just the fact that so much attention was on him as a person and he became the leader of the country last year seemed to be a large part of what that was about.
That's a part of it. We still really haven't given that eclipse its official 6 months to show us what it is or isn't going to do.
Yeah, it's definitely not over yet.
You know, there are a lot of thematic things you can say about Trump and eclipse. But when you look at that cycle, that North Node in Leo, South Node in Aquarius eclipse cycle, very literal things happen to presidents where you don't have to like dig for the details, like Bill Clinton getting impeached or Reagan getting shot. Like they're usually not subtle. And so it will be a strong deviation from the historical pattern if we don't have a much more literal event for Donald Trump. Deviations from patterns happen, right? And he may be, you know, because he was literally born during a lunar eclipse, that might give him some sort of weird immunity to that rule. But I'm a little wait and see about it. For me, looking at the eclipse and what did the eclipse signify, the literal destruction of huge parts of the United States by fire and water within the next 2 weeks was rather shockingly literal. Like the Northwest caught on fire and, you know, hurricanes battered areas of the Gulf Coast. It was very literal as far as like, oh, yes, this is a bad omen for this country, destruction, right? I don't think that can be ignored. That was, again, a little bit more literal than I was looking. And I know people are excited about the fall of many people from positions of power. They're excited about attributing that to Jupiter and Scorpio. But that is literally a classic signification of a total solar eclipse that you see over country is that, it signifies the eclipsing of those who are at high and bright places. Chris, you had some quote that you read. Yeah. I think it was you. It was like, and, you know, it was, you know, something Hellenistic, I'm sure. But it was that the common people need not fear the eclipse so much as those who are in positions of power, you know, or those who are magistrates and this and that. And, you know, there are certainly a slew of people in very, very powerful and influential positions who got nuked, you know, not long after the eclipse. So I think between that and the weather, the natural disaster stuff, those are gimmies because those are classic significations. And Trump, you know, wait and see.
Sure. And did you have anything to say about that, Kelly? I was going to mention a few things, but...
Oh, just briefly concurring with Austin around the idea of the sun being eclipsed in Leo, leaders having a downfall. So I think, Austin, you make a really good point that it's not just Jupiter and Scorpio necessarily, or maybe that's incorrectly getting a lot of the credit when if we're still in that 6 month period after this very dramatic Leo eclipse. Leaders of all kind, leaders of industry, leaders in business, it doesn't just have to be the culture. Leader of the country, I guess. So yeah, that was a really good point.
Well, also
yeah, culture, exactly. Yeah, the Hollywood sun certainly is.
The sun and entertainers, I think, is a real thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
what were you going to add, Chris?
Just that, and of course, you made a good point, Austin, with some of the shifts recently, Saturn moving to Capricorn, but also I had a long-standing thing I've been waiting more than a year now to find out what that was going to be, which is that prior to the 2016 election, I didn't understand why Trump had a career transition that would be starting at the end. It starts on like December 28th and it lasts for about 17 months using the Zodiac releasing Time Lord technique. And I didn't understand why he'd be having a career transition a year after the election. So that's a longstanding thing that I've been looking forward to seeing what that's about. You know, I have some speculations of what it could be, but at this point, since we're there, I guess we'll have a front row seat basically over the course of the next 16 months, starting here pretty soon. So we'll see what happens. And I'm sure that's still very much tied into the eclipse and some of the events that were taking place around the eclipse, whether or not we know about them or know what they set in motion already now.
Yeah, that's that the hindsight thing with astrology. Where you look back and you're like, well, of course, that was the seed point for this incredibly important event. But when you just see a little seed going in the ground, you know, a lot of times it's very hard to imagine that it will grow into the tree. When you've given that seed time to germinate and you look back on it, you're like, oh, yeah, well, it got planted in July. That's obvious now. But, you know, it's one of the things.
Definitely. All right, so continuation, and we'll have a continuation of some of those stories that started with the previous Aquarius Leo eclipses as those eclipses continue over the course of the next year. We've also got an interesting thing that someone pointed out, a few astrologers have noted, which is that all of the Mercury retrogrades this year take place in fire signs, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty interesting and unique.
It's not that unique. It's part of the Mercury cycle that repeats. But it's absolutely worth noting. You know, almost all of them began, two out of three in 2017, began in Earth and then ended in fire. And the cycles kind of moved back a little bit. So the first two this year are just first ones in Aries, entire things in Aries. Second one's entirely in Leo. And then the third one begins in Sag, but gets into late Scorpio for its direct station. But they're, you know, 90% in fire. And that's interesting to me in particular. And Kelly, I know you're into humors and qualities. Because so we've got that fiery element. 2017 was overwhelmingly fiery. And so we have that fiery element to 2018 with all of the Mercury retrogrades, but we have that strong earthy anchor with Saturn in Capricorn. You have any thoughts on the elemental mix this year?
Yeah, look, I do, because it is very different. I don't know that I would say as an absolute form that, you know, 2018 is earthy, but if we compare it relative to 2017, it is earthier or more earthy. And I do think it's the Mercury retrogrades in fire that carry the fire thread through. But from those larger planets, of course, Saturn in Capricorn, even Jupiter now being in a water sign, it's bringing it into the cool side of the temperamental qualities. And then I think it's really interesting that we will have Uranus in Taurus for about half the year from May to November, which is a cooler version of Uranus as well. And we've had, you know, I know the modern planets don't have sort of the traditional designations per se, but from chatting to people like Lee Lehman and even just reflecting, Uranus definitely has more of that heating quality to him just based on what happens with his transits, for instance. So having Uranus been in a fire sign for the last, you know, most, the better part of the last 8 years, we've had a very volatile version of Uranus. And I don't want that to be misconstrued as saying we will not see volatility, because I think we absolutely will. And we're going to see it around the Taurus realms, the material world, money, food. Lynn Bell in the Wellbeing Astrology Guide wrote a really interesting article which touched on Uranus in Taurus. And she looked at actually the liberation of women as a thread that comes up around Uranus in Taurus, which I thought was really interesting with the rulership mm-hmm. of Venus. And so I do think from an elemental or a temperamental piece, we are shifting into a cooler period that does have a slower pacing. And that comes from that cool, dry earth focus, which is one of the things I'm really interested about to see unfold for 2018.
Definitely. So I want to jump in on the Uranus and Taurus. I don't want to go into a big delineation of it.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe we should.
This is an overview piece.
Should we hold that? Yeah. Okay.
And so I was straining to understand this year, and I thought that I would understand it better if I looked at it relative to not just the years which have come before, but like the next 10 years and how does this fit into the story of where things are going. And it reminded me of something very interesting. So 2018 is the first year that we will have Uranus in Taurus, Neptune in Pisces, and Pluto in Capricorn. So what's interesting about that is that that's what we're going to do until 2025 when all three change signs. And so that's going to be this steady background until the middle of the next decade. And then that's going to like, it's going to feel like all three of those change overnight from being in three yin signs, you know, water and earth signs, into three yang signs. Mm-hmm. And so this, just as this is the yeah. first year of Saturn in Cap, which is like a three-year arc, this is also the first year of a seven-year arc that's going to take us to a major transition point.
That's a really good point, Austin. And yeah, Chris, I don't know if at some point we should do a show on these longer trends, because there's so much interesting shifting on this. I know we don't want to get sidebarred with it today, but that what Austin just said and how those cycles relate back to stuff that happened 500 years ago, phenomenal stuff. So maybe we could, I know you want to keep us moving because Austin and I will just keep talking.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're still supposed to theoretically do like a Saturn and Capricorn episode sometime in January, and maybe we could fold it into that, or maybe we could just set up for a separate outer planet episode once we get that full Saturn and Capricorn one out of the way. Because the one we did with Saturn and Sag went so well.
Perfect.
And ended up being such a good preview and such a good setup for what the next few years of Saturn and Sagittarius were like. I really want to make sure we do that again for Saturn and Capricorn.
Perfect. It deserves it.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a great okay. point, Austin.
Anyway, thank you. Chris, I was really
what,
excited.
What do you want us to talk about next?
Well, so in terms of the other stuff, we've also got the Mars retrograde that's going to happen this year in Aquarius and Capricorn. It's going to go retrograde in Aquarius and then go direct in Capricorn. We've also got a Venus retrograde, which starts in Scorpio and then goes back to Libra. And then finally, later in the year, we have Jupiter ingressing into Sagittarius and leaving Scorpio eventually, although it spends most of the year in Scorpio. And then finally, the only other thing I noticed is in terms of overviews this year is that there's this weird lack of outer planet alignments, at least in terms of exact aspects. When I was putting together the Planet Watcher calendar yesterday, the only exact aspects that were happening from outer planets were Jupiter trine Neptune three times next year and Jupiter sextile Pluto. And other than that, that was pretty much it. There were some that got very close, that's but it. They never go exact. So is that
yeah,
what you
that
guys
is
found
really
as well?
Interesting. Yep. I noticed that too. Yeah. Yeah. The biggest aspects is it's Jupiter trine Neptune and Jupiter sextile Pluto. That's it. Saturn trine Uranus within a few minutes or within maybe a degree in August, but it doesn't become exact because of the way the stations work. But that's it. There's no big clash bang Uranus square Pluto brouhaha happening, which I think is interesting. I think there's enough other stuff going on that's going to stir the pot, but yeah, we don't have a banner level aspect, I guess.
No, I would say that the closest we get to that is the Saturn Pluto co-presence, but they're not even remotely mm-hmm. conjoined by degree.
So it's like there's aspects that are building and that we start getting previews of, but It's not like some of these other years where we're dealing with like Uranus square Pluto off and on all year, or, you know, Saturn square Neptune off and on all year in 2016 and stuff like that.
Right. Well, we've had
I know when we get to
I was just saying we've had more than enough of that over the last several years.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we'll talk about this when we get to the right quarters, but just as a just to flag at top level, one of the most interesting aspects of this year that I've got my eye on is how the Mars retrograde is going to tie into squaring Uranus. So Mars is going through early Aquarius three times as part of its retrograde cycle, and that's going to put Mars into this sort of aggravating square with Uranus at that early part of Taurus. So it's not, you know, you wouldn't necessarily pick that aspect in a year where Uranus was square Pluto, but I think failing that, that's going to be an interesting aspect to watch from a big picture perspective.
So I think we're like ready to jump into quarters and really, you know, tear into it.
Yeah, let's do it. We've been beating around the bush a little bit here, so let's get into the details of the year. So let's start with quarter one. So the first 3 months of the year, January through March. What is our focus? What is our main theme in quarter one?
Well, it's the least dramatic quarter. Would be the theme. Doesn't mean there won't be drama. The primary thing I'm looking at, and that I think people will notice in the first quarter, is the next installment of eclipses. There being a solar eclipse in Aquarius and a lunar eclipse in Leo. I also think it's probably worth noting that in relatively early January, the Venus makes a superior conjunction to the Sun, which is, Venus Kazemi in Capricorn. And that is, you know, the counterpoint to the retrograde, to Venus's retrograde, which happens in Q4. And that, you know, if you're going to pay attention to the retrogrades, you should probably also pay attention to the direct conjunctions or the superior conjunctions. They're sort of the mellower, more insightful counterparts.
Right, because you treat that, and that's kind of like the beginning of the Sun-Venus cycle, basically, is that conjunction of the Sun and Venus when Venus is moving direct rather than retrograde?
Yeah, I mean, there are, I think, strong arguments to be made on both sides of it begins on the inferior conjunction, which happens during the retrograde, or it begins on the superior. They're both very important. You know, we could argue, it's almost like arguing about full moons and new moons. But we can both people on both sides of that argument would agree that new moons and full moons are important, right? And so this is the superior conjunction of Venus to the Sun is Venus on the far side of the Sun, reaching out into the solar system and into space, versus the retrograde conjunction, which we'll have in it's either late October or early November, where Venus is between the Sun and the Earth. And so the superior conjunction is that reaching out, and it's considered to be a point of purification in a lot of ways. But like a nice purification rather than a, you know, getting tossed in a fire sort of purification.
I love that you picked this one out, because this is actually the same day as our auspicious election that we wanted to highlight for this month. So I think I might actually go ahead and introduce that now while we're on this date. So the electional chart actually that Lisa picked out for this month, we wanted to focus on a Saturn election, and it's actually earlier in the year is better, where you can get some day charts with Saturn and Capricorn being in its own sign. So what I have here for our auspicious electional chart for January, it's set for January 8th, 2018, at approximately 7:26 a.m. Here in Denver, Colorado, since that's about when sunrise occurs. But basically what you need to do is you just need to set your electional time for whenever sunrise is locally, and the sun just begins to rise over the ascendant or over the eastern horizon, with Capricorn still rising, and that will basically be the electional chart. So this is the same day as the Sun Venus Kazemi, which Austin mentioned. And part of the purpose of this chart is it has Capricorn rising and Saturn in Capricorn in the first whole sign house. So it's in the same sign as the rising sign. So it's still technically in the first house according to whole sign houses. And it's a day chart, which is the other very important thing, is making this a day chart rather than a night chart, so that Saturn is in this of the sect in favor, as they say in Hellenistic astrology. So the chart also features some other nice things like the moon in Libra and the 10th whole sign house applying to a square with Venus with reception, which is positive. A square to a benefic with reception, since the moon is in Venus's sign, is relatively positive. This is just after the Mars-Jupiter conjunction in Scorpio, which is actually around the degree of the MC in the 11th whole sign house. We weren't able to get Mercury. The only part of this chart I didn't like is that Mercury is kind of hidden away in the 12th house, and we weren't really able to help him out very much, but he is otherwise not a major part of this election, so I don't think it's a huge deal. But this is a very good Saturn election if you're trying to do something related to Saturn, or where you're trying to invoke Saturn-type themes or archetypes. This would be a good chart very early in the year in order to try to harness some of that energy, so to speak. What kind of, you guys have any advice on like Saturn and Capricorn type elections, or things that you would do with a strong sort of Saturn heavy chart like this one?
Begin a diet, begin a workout regimen, begin, lay the foundations, you know, to something. And I would say beginning any sort of discipline that you intend to keep, you know, for the next X amount of time, maybe save your New Year's resolutions for the 8th.
Yes, I agree. Stuff that will last for a long time, or things that require a bit of effort, you know, whether it's sort of welcoming in that necessary work.
Sure. Yeah. And
there's like a sub theme of Venus in here as well, just with the Venus sun and the moon applying to Venus. So maybe the diet thing is great because you're pulling an appearance there too.
Yeah, and I like that to offset the election, because usually Saturn has this reputation of being kind of harsh or kind of austere. But by throwing Venus in there on the degree of the ascendant, essentially, and also putting the moon in Libra applying to Venus, it can help to soften the election a little bit, especially in terms of aesthetics and sort of the appearance of whatever it is that you're initiating at that time, and making it a little bit more appealing and a little less harsh than it might be otherwise.
Yeah, well, and you can impose a discipline on yourself in order to balance yourself, right? You know, eat less of this, so that, not so you can be deprived, but so you can be closer to balance, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that is the electional chart that we're highlighting for January. And Lisa has actually picked out, as usual, as we do every month, three other auspicious electional charts, which we're going to talk about on the Auspicious Elections podcast later this month, which is available for patrons. So if you'd like to get access to that discussion, then all you have to do is become a patron of the Astrology Podcast in the $5 or $10 tier through our page on Patreon, and then you'll get access to the 45-minute Auspicious Elections podcast for January, where we go over our four top charts that we found during the course of the month. So that is it for our election for January. Moving back to the discussion, so Austin, you were going through the Sun-Venus Kazemi before I interrupted you. And the other major theme of the first quarter, is it basically just the eclipses that are coming up in the Aquarius-Leo axis again?
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. I would note with the Sun-Venus Kazemi, and a Kazemi is what you call an exact conjunction of another planet with the sun.
Great.
It's being in the heart of the sun. And it's considered to be it's a special moment. Some people liken it to the sun granting that planet a special favor, you know, having the king's favor, having the sovereign's favor. I would be remiss if I did not note that this particular conjunct Kazemi of Venus and the sun is almost exactly conjunct Pluto, So, you know, maybe take back what I said about the purifications being sweet and gentle. You know, there will probably be some long, deep conversations about the structure of relationships happening in the days around that. And it's probably a good time to do that. You know, it might never be a fun time to do that, but that's intense, you know, and that's whether it's the midpoint in the cycle, in the Venus cycle, or the beginning point, it sets a tone that's going to last for, you know, three quarters of the year as in terms of Venusian affairs. So I would pay attention to that, especially if you're a more Venusian person, or, you know, that's the hand of the clock that your life moves in sync with.
Right, definitely. And we can sort of visualize this conjunction right here. It's taking place at 18 and 19 degrees of Capricorn during that time frame in early January, around the 8th and 9th. That's a pretty close pile up right there. And it's interesting because it's almost exactly sextile that Mars-Jupiter conjunction at 18-19 Scorpio at the same time.
Right, which just perfected.
It's definitely... Yeah, one of the big energy, the high energy days in January, if not the first quarter, for sure.
And that'll probably take a few days to sink in, would be my guess. I mean, the Mars-Jupiter thing's going to be, you know, ramped up for a week ahead of time. But when planets are hidden behind the sun, a lot of times they have a very strong internal or spiritual quality that isn't necessarily immediately obvious in events. But, you know, those Kazime conjunctions, a lot of times that's when the really key insights land, where you're like, oh, I've been doing it this way for years, but I don't have to, right? Or, oh, and you see yourself from a new angle, or you see someone else from a new angle. Those things which are, you know, they're just perceptions, but they're really critical. Critical as in crucial, not critical as in negative.
Right. And in terms of, you know, we've been mentioning the eclipses, but I just wanted to mention that the very first one, the solar eclipse in Leo, takes place at the very end of January, on January 31st. So that's really, you know, early in the year already. We get hit with the next eclipse. And then after that... I apologize. That's the lunar eclipse, which occurs on the 31st of January. And then there's a solar eclipse that occurs in Aquarius on the 15th of February. So, and that's the pair that's connected to the ones that happened 6 months before that, which was basically last summer, and the set that occurred in Leo and Aquarius then, right?
Yep. Kelly, you have some thoughts?
Yes. Yeah, I think Austin and I were just doing briefly in our pre-show chat. Yeah. So definitely it's January 31st in North America, February 1st in Australia, and then February 15, February 16. They do hark back to the August 2017 period. I'm actually really interested in the lunar eclipse, so the Jan 31, Feb 1, because the two lunar eclipses in 2018 are total lunar eclipses. So that makes them a more dramatic or visual spectacle. But it also makes them, I think, more of a stirring or an activating force from an astrological perspective too. So the lunar eclipse is at 11 Leo at the end of January. It's only 3 degrees off the nodes, which is how, as astrologers, we know it's a tighter eclipse. We've got the Venus pulled in there because the Sun and Venus are right on the south node at the time of that eclipse. So I think we're going to see some sort of dramatic revelations around that time. We're certainly going to get this feeling of heightened energy, heightened focus. I mean, it's back in Leo, and that is going to put the spotlight on leaders again, which I think is interesting. But for my money and to my mind, that event, that lunar eclipse, total lunar eclipse at the end of January, is probably the biggest thing happening in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Austin, I know you've got thoughts on this too.
They're very similar to yours. so much so that I don't need to repeat you. Let's see. What can I add anything? I would just think back, like, look at your chart, look at what houses Leo and Aquarius are, and look at what happened in the part of your life that house points to during August. You know, if I have a friend, for example, who quit his job like a month before that and was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to find something new, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it wasn't blah, blah, blah. There were legitimate concerns. And I looked at the fact that his 10th was Leo and there's going to be a big eclipse there. And so he ended up starting his new job, which was perfect, on the eclipse. You know, the whatever action is happening, like, so for him, that was the 10th, which is the professional house. If Leo's your 10th, then look for think about what happened professionally and what you were thinking about, you know, your place in the world and your labor in August, and then look for the next installment in that arc, end of January, beginning of February.
Yeah, definitely. And that's so huge, because for some people, you can really just see the eclipses bouncing back and forth over that year and a half or almost 2 year period between those two houses in their chart, and how that really does just light up the topics associated with those houses, especially if the person like goes into a perfection year where like Leo or Cancer is activated, so that the luminaries are more heightened in their focus during that time, or if you know, they have an angle that falls like right on the eclipse degree or something like that. Like here, the lunar eclipse is taking place at 11 degrees of Leo. So if you're like ascendant or your descendant or your midheaven or something was right there, then that would be a particularly important eclipse for you.
Yeah. And again, we've already done a couple of these. So just look at what happened, you know, look at what happened before, how the eclipses churned that pair of houses.
Right. Definitely. Okay. So we've got that eclipse taking place on the 31st. And then the next one, of course, takes place approximately 2 weeks later. And that is the solar eclipse, which occurs, it looks like, at 27 degrees.
It's 27 Aquarius.
Sure, 27 yeah. Aquarius on about February 15th of 2018. So 27 Aquarius, and that's a solar eclipse at that time.
It is. It's a little partial eclipse because the lunation, the sun-moon conjunction, is a little ways off the node itself. And this is really the direct opposition eclipse, if you like, to the Great American Eclipse, just by degrees of August of last year. So that is going to be interesting just to see, again, that pair of houses. But now, rather than the big Leo drama manifestation of this eclipse pair, we've got the Aquarius, you know, the thinking about it or the pulling it together or trying to bring a little bit of logic or rationality into the process. Austin, you probably have more to say on this one, I think. I don't know.
I would agree. I think it's much more reflective, much more digestion oriented. And that's in part because it's on the South Node. And in part because it's in Aquarius. It's much, you know, that should be a quiet day. Not necessarily that the world will be quiet that day, but that, I would say a good use of that would be to make space to digest experiences and to, you know, to just sit with whatever needs sitting with.
Yes. I think that's a really good way of approaching it.
Definitely.
And yeah, that's the first pair of eclipses, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing that we have written down for quarter one is, you know, one of those few aspects that we see come and go during the course of the year that's not like a major sort of tension aspect, but it was one outer planetary alignment that is taking place, which is Jupiter sextile Pluto off and on over the course of the year, right?
Yeah, and I didn't need to take a lot of time on this. I just thought it was worth mentioning as one of the few larger aspects for 2018. And the other reason to mention it for January is it's the first hit. So there will be three direct hits of Jupiter sextile Pluto in 2018. The first hit I've got here about January the 16th, around 19 degrees Scorpio, 19 degrees Capricorn. So I do think just in that, taking the idea or the thread of Jupiter sextile Pluto, you know, an unfolding of an opportunity or an idea that emerges in January that you play out or that you explore throughout the year, because we do get another activation in April when Jupiter is retrograde sextile Pluto, and the final piece is about mid-September when Jupiter then direct makes the final Jupiter-Pluto activation. So again, I think in the same kind of advice, look at the houses, the Scorpio house, the Pluto house, So the Scorpio house, the Capricorn house, mostly because I think this aspect is pulling in or connecting the longer trend of Jupiter in Scorpio with the longer trend of Pluto in Capricorn. So there'll be an interesting way of pairing up or, you know, connecting the topics of those two houses. And I think if you're really deeply in tune with watching your chart, you're going to see that emerge in January when we get this first activation. So mostly just that it's two slightly longer trends connecting for a short and potentially, you know, in a potentially helpful or easy way, because it will be a sextile aspect. And the only other, yeah, I think that's probably it for the first quarter. I don't know if Austin has any comment to add to that or whether we just want to go to quarter two.
One little thing. The word transformative does get overused a lot in astrology, but I really want to use that for.
I know, I'm with you on this, Austin. I know, I feel like a cliche, but
you know, as far as like relatively gentle ongoing transformations, that's kind of what it wants me to say.
Yeah. A little support for that.
Brilliant. All right. So if that's it for the first quarter, then I think we'll move on to quarter two here. And the big looming thing in quarter two, which is such a huge deal, is Uranus ingressing into Taurus. And that happens in May, I believe, right?
It does. I want to jump. There's one thing that's worth talking about before that. And it actually starts in mid-March and then it ends in mid-May. And that is the fact that we're going to have Mars and Saturn and Pluto all in Capricorn for about two solid months. And that's a heck of a combo. So, you know,
the ingress looks like it takes place on March 17th. Mars moves into Capricorn.
Yeah. And I believe it moves out on May 15th.
Yes.
Okay.
And so, you know, Mars and Saturn are traditionally the malefics. And if we were going to put Pluto in the benefic or malefic category, I think he would fall very solidly in the malefic category. And Capricorn is the only sign where both malefics are empowered. Saturn rules Capricorn and Mars is exalted there.
Yes.
And, you know, when malefics, Mars and Saturn, are in signs that they rule or exalted, and when they're powerful, it means they're really good at doing Mars and Saturn things. It doesn't mean that they suddenly become supremely nice. Dignity does not make malefics good guys. Mars doesn't stop wanting to burn things. Mars doesn't stop enjoying a good fight. And so, you know, there are going to be some hard moments for people during these 2 months, you know. There's no way around that. Doesn't mean that death befalls the entire land and, you know, plague wipes us all out or anything, but it's a hard combo. It'll be noticeable. One thing I would point out is if we're looking in, you and Lisa may have already gotten to this, Chris, or this might be a fun surprise waiting for you, but there are going to be a ton of the moon besieged between the rays of two very powerful malefics, right? So every time the moon goes through Capricorn, that's going to be a bonus. It's going to be a very Capricorn-y moon. Every time it goes through Aries, it's going to have to square them. Every time it goes through Libra, it's going to square them. Every time it goes through Cancer, it's going to have to oppose all three. And so that's really going to affect the rhythm of those 2 months.
Yeah, that really makes a lot of the cardinal elections difficult, where it's like you're going to have to skip certain signs where you can't put the moon in those signs for a while. You're going to have to skip certain rising signs. It really makes things tricky. So here's an example. On April 7th, for example, the moon is separating from a conjunction. The moon is in Capricorn. It's separating from a conjunction with Saturn at 9 Capricorn, and it's applying to a conjunction with Mars at 11 Capricorn. So it's fully besieged or enclosed between a conjunction between those two planets.
Yeah. And then when it gets free, it gets to go visit Pluto.
Right.
Yeah. So April has two dates to throw into what you're talking about, Austin. We'll have Mars conjunct Saturn around the 3rd of April, exactly, and then Mars conjunct Pluto at the end of April around the 26th. So I agree with you, Austin, that the entire period of Mars in the same sign as Saturn is definitely one to watch. For those who sort of need a little bit of evidentiary proof, cast your minds and memories back to 2016 and the periods then when we had Mars in Sag, when we also had Saturn in Sag. And for a number of people that I worked with around Saturn transits while Saturn was in Sag, those periods in 2016 when Mars was in Sag too were the hardest or the heaviest or the most challenging. So not that we want to scare you or freak you out, but this is a period to watch with Mars and Saturn. And then, of course, Mars and Saturn in the same sign will do it. But if we add in Pluto, yeah, Austin.
Oh, yeah, I would just add the time before that was when Mars and Saturn were in Scorpio together. And that's when the Ebola outbreak happened.
That was horrible, too, for a number of reasons. We just had someone asking about Mars and Saturn in Sag. So I'm pretty sure it was March, April, May 2016, and then August, September 2016. So just the co-presence of Mars and Saturn being in the same sign, adding it in with Pluto. So that's definitely worth a mention.
Yeah.
Before we get to the big news of this quarter, which is Uranus going into Taurus. And Chris, you mentioned that Mars leaves Capricorn around the 15th of May. It does. So that it is waiting at zero Aquarius the moment that Uranus crosses into Taurus. So we get a very volatile or explosive expression of Uranus coming into Taurus because the moment that that happens, we get this square
that's
forming.
That's a really good point, Kelly.
That's where I'm sort of so, yeah, I'm so interested in that aspect because we're not going to really get a sense of just Uranus in Taurus energy. I don't think we see that properly till 2019 because 2018 Uranus in Taurus is flavored by this aggravation from Mars in Aquarius.
And yeah, there are a couple things that connect to that. One, last couple degrees of Mars's time in Capricorn are Mars entering the shadow of the retrograde. Mars will eventually station direct at the end of Capricorn. So even, you know, we get through that Capricorn period, but there's a piece at the end that we're going to have to come back to. And like Kelly said, you know, just a few degrees into that shadow when Mars ingresses into Aquarius, where it will be for quite some time, you get the first square to Uranus, right? The first of three.
Yeah, around the 15th of the month, I think.
And yeah, so it's right at 29. I'm just animating the chart.
No, Mars.
Oh, it does make the ingress first. Okay.
Yeah.
So I it's think Uranus goes into zero Taurus, and then Mars goes into zero Aquarius. So that's quite a way to start off Uranus ingressing into a new sign after what 7 years now? It's been moving through Aries?
Like seven, and then like a half year. 2010, it did a toe dip and then went back to Pisces. 2011, it was March, I want to say like March 12th of 2011 when it entered Aries for good. Not for good, but, you know, solidly and wasn't going to regress.
Yes,
I was watching solidly. Rick Levine's yearly forecast the other night, and he pointed out that the Fukushima disaster happened shortly after one of those initial ingresses of Uranus into Aries.
Yeah, it was the for keepsies ingress.
Okay,
it was March 2011.
Got it. So yeah, so this is huge, and this is huge also because it's not just moving in there for this year. This is going to be the first year, but it's going to stay there for quite some time for the better part of a decade, basically, right?
Yeah, this is like the preview, May to November 2018. This is a taste of what's to come because in early 2019, Uranus is in Taurus, to use Austin's phrase, for keepsies, for a solid 7 years, right into that mid-2020s decade that Austin flagged earlier. So this is a huge shift, having an outer planet like Uranus change signs. We are getting a level of that, like this is a shift in the paradigm or the collective kind of vibe and theme. And we are coming out of fire and we are going into Earth, but we're bringing Uranus into the realm of Earth. And the first image that I get from that is this idea of, you know, volcanoes or tectonic plates starting to shift. And so things that are, and I observed this, I remember when Uranus was in Aquarius, the last time it was in a fixed sign years ago, because as much as we're all younger astrologers, I know I was, and I'm sure you guys were already working with astrology then. And I remembered that transits from Uranus in a fixed sign, it's the idea of, you know, if something doesn't bend, it breaks. Now, when Uranus is in a fixed sign, in a mutable sign, sorry, there's more bendiness. Mutable signs by their nature bend. Cardinal signs, you just have to put a fire under them and they go. But fixed signs need a little bit more of a warm-up period, and they're not flexible. So it's really interesting to see how things have to come apart to be reformed to come back together. And I'm going to be really interested to watch, you know, the Taurus area in my own chart, my own birth chart. And I think that is how we all need to be paying attention to this cycle personally. What house does Taurus hold for us, and how is that part of our life going to be really shaken, not stirred, over this next little while? But I'm interested to hear what you guys have to think about it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would also add that not only is Taurus fixed, but it's Earth. So if we're talking about solidity, density, and therefore a lack of flexibility, Taurus is kind of number one, getting to be the fixed Earth sign. And, you know, when I first learned astrology, I learned that Uranus was exalted in Scorpio and fallen in Taurus. And I don't agree with that now, but I am sympathetic with what that implies. I do think that there's an especially difficult pairing of Taurus and Uranus that we're going to be dealing with. Because if you think about things in Taurus, whatever house that is, that's a place where things go best when they go smoothly, right? It's business as usual. Business doesn't, you know, like it's not helpful to have to not be able to project profits for next quarter and know how much you're going to, you know, be able to reserve for bills or, you know, whatever. Or if you think about the Venusian side of Taurus, you know, it's nice if the flower garden isn't full of people who have Halloween masks and jump out and they're like, ha, gotcha. You know, right while you're, you know, scared the Jesus out of you while you're trying to smell the flowers. It's a difficult pairing. And so I've been doing some initial thinking on it. And I think that, you know, I think it's pretty obvious. I think I'm one of 800 astrologers who put together Uranus in Taurus and cryptocurrency. If we're talking about Venus ruling an Earth sign, things which have monetary value. And I think that Uranus will probably be very disruptive to the valuation of things in general. But especially, you know, those things which are particularly demarcated as units of value, currencies, right? And we have like, you know, the Uranus technology connection, like currency and new currency. And so I think that, you know, the cryptocurrency story will play out during Uranus and Taurus. I think Patrick Watson had a piece on Uranus and Taurus that he called 3D printed everything, which makes a lot of sense to me. Right. You guys see that?
Yeah, that was great.
Another one, that's a very interesting idea, that idea of like currency and something that normally is supposed to be stable, and what happens if something that you usually think should be or you rely on it being stable isn't, or has like wild fluctuations. Another thing like that I was thinking about that somebody brought up when we did our yearly forecast for our local astrology group in Denver was the associations of Taurus and Venus with food, and the ideas of like changes and like radical shifts in food and, you know, nourishment and things like that, like very fundamental sort of physical things that are needed in order to support life. And what advancements or developments or, you know, technological departures would look like when it comes to an area like that. And one of the ones that was kind of interesting as a concept was the idea of like, you know, starting to head towards lab-grown meat and things like that. And what happens at the point when, you know, growing meat in a lab or something like that is just as cheap as growing it on a farm? And at what point do things start shifting more radically in that direction, or other sort of interesting things that we don't think about or that we take for granted and are just sort of like mainstays in, you know, our life, you know, what happens when you have a planet like Uranus that either takes a wrecking ball to it or otherwise, you know, brings something to the table that's just out of left field that you hadn't even contemplated before.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I also think that, and I'm not primarily a financial astrologer, but it kind of screams volatility in commodities markets, like the actual value of things, like how much is corn worth, right? How much is, how much is iron worth? Like, you know, the there's something about Taurus, which speaks very much to just things. Like, this is stuff. This is iron. We use it. We put it together and make things of iron. You know, this is gold. These are stones. This is wheat, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know, it kind of screams volatility in the value of like the materials, that we use to make our things and make our bodies.
Definitely. All right. So those are the main things. And then of course, the Mars square Uranus is going to be happening off and on because Mars goes retrograde later in the year. So that's something we're going to get three hits of, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we get one hit in this quarter and we get the second two hits in the next quarter.
Okay, got it. So are there any other things in quarter two that we want to touch on, or should we jump right into quarter three?
I think the only thing just to mention that the Mars retrograde starts on June 25th at 9 Aquarius. The bulk of it is going to happen in the next quarter, just to flag it for people from a date perspective.
Sure. But it's already like slowing down and getting ready to station by that point.
Really slow. Yeah.
So super slow. And then there it is, stationary.
Anything you want to add, Austin?
Sorry. I'm sorry. What did I want to add to which piece?
Just, is there anything you want to add to this quarter two, before we go?
No,
on to the
I think I'd rather just deal with, the Mars retrograde and Q3, because that's 90% of it.
Let's actually jump right into that at the start. So I know the eclipses are next on our list, but that retrograde, it's slowing down and it's stationary by the very end of June. It looks like it stations retrograde by June 26th, June 27th at 9 degrees of Aquarius. And that basically then takes us into July and into our third quarter.
Yep. Yeah. And so it's a Mars retrograde. And this Mars retrograde ties in very strongly with the eclipse cycle. And I think that's our, I think for you, Kelly, definitely for me, that's the like the single thing of the year is the total eclipse conjunct Mars retrograde within a few degrees.
On the south node so tightly. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on there. Should we start with the Mars part and then get into the eclipses, or eclipses and then Mars?
Let's go with the Mars, just because it's chronological.
All right. So what are your thoughts on this one, Kelly? I've been getting my head around it, but I'm not entirely there.
Yeah, I have to say I agree. I'm totally there on some of the activations, you know, that we've talked about, Uranus, Mars, and the Mars eclipse. It's intriguing because Mars is such a volatile or fiery kind of energy, and we've got Mars in Aquarius. So it's sort of like that idea of, can we channel this heat into debate or discussion or into producing ideas or innovative awareness? But, and so I'm happier to have Mars retrograde in, say, an air sign and the tail end in Earth than last time we had Mars retrograde in a fire sign, because I think that just makes it very volatile. But I think there's going to be tension. There's going to be tension around debate or around discussion, and the frustration that comes whenever Mars is retrograde around the lack of progress or the lack of movement and momentum. And we may see that playing out collectively and politically, but I think personally, that's how a lot of us will experience it, is that sense of feeling a bit dead in the water, like you're on the boat and the power's been cut and you're now a little bit at the mercy of things that you can't control as much as you'd like. And so managing one's inner frustration, or being aware that that mid-year period from late June to late August, we've got this kind of treading water period that's going to happen. And just as you're animating there, Chris, yeah, that idea of, I think you've got the eclipse. And I think the peak period within the the Mars opposition, the Mars retrograde, it's kind of happening around that eclipse because we will have Mars opposite the sun at those same degrees. So I think that late July period is what it's all sort of building up to.
Yeah, just looking at that, that's crazy how close the lunar eclipse right there at 4 degrees of Aquarius is to that retrograde Mars, which then of course are all square to Uranus at 2 degrees of Taurus. That's such a tense, volatile combination.
That's what I was, you know, it's like, dude, that's my pick of the year as far as if you're going to pay attention to one thing. I saw that, I don't know, earlier this year, and I was like, going to have to think about that.
Yeah.
Just a few things to add to what you're saying about Mars retrograde, Kelly. I absolutely experience and see those dead in the water moments where you're just like, I'm relatively Marsy. There are a number of pieces of my chart that run on Mars. And during those Mars retrogrades, I'm like, I hit the gas pedal and there's no movement. Like, I'm, you know, I'll have these moments of just no energy. And I've talked to clients who are Marsy and they have similar experiences. But what I will say about Mars retrograde is it's not all dead in the water. It's like dead in the water half the time, and then there'll be a furious storm, which doesn't actually help you get anywhere either. But there's like this lack of like steady, helpful, you know, it's either like no gasoline or the gas is splashed everywhere. Mars retrograde periods, a lot of people experience it. It's like you don't have that happy medium where the gas is just in the gas tank. I would add to that that in my experience with watching the lives of people who have Mars retrograde natally, they do great. For some reason, I collect Mars retrogrades. I know a lot of Mars retrogrades in my personal life. And they can, it's not all 100% favorable, but Mars retrogrades are consistently much more favorable for people who are born in that phase themselves, regardless of sign.
Interesting. Or, you know, even other people that are born with like Mercury retrogrades that sometimes respond a little bit more to that. It seems to be almost like a general principle.
Yeah. It's your phase. You know, no matter how great or not great or, you know, whatever its qualities, you're familiar with it. You're like, I know how to do this. I've been doing this for 35 years or, you know, or whatever.
Right.
I'm thinking about Mars in an air sign retrograde. And one thing I see with Mars is in air signs generally, and especially when it's retrograde in air signs, like it was retrograde in Libra not too many years ago, is sometimes you get a lot of, anxiety. A lot of negative internal wind would be one way to put it, where it's just sort of like, oh, I don't know. What do I do? Do I do this? Do I do that? And that's when you feel pushed to do something, but you don't know what the right decision is. Like, that's a great recipe for anxiety. When you feel like something's important and you should do something, but you can't decide or there isn't a clear option. So you end up blowing back and forth between things. That's pretty much Mars retrograde and air sign is a wonderful recipe for that type of anxiety generating, you know, structure.
Absolutely. I mean, Mars inflames things. And in an air sign, it's the mind, the thinking, and the communication processes that get inflamed. They can become indecisive, confusing, or even contentious. And that can be internal or external. So it's difficult, I think.
And it's funny you guys mentioning that because this actually takes place, that full moon takes place shortly after Mercury is just stationed like a day or two before that. So this is taking place right on a Mercury retrograde station at the beginning of a Mercury retrograde. Then you get a lunar eclipse, full moon, conjunct Mars, square Uranus at the same time.
And not to be a Debbie Downer, but if you look at the previous lunations, they're like on Pluto and on Saturn. July, basically that Mars retrograde is not the only difficult thing.
Mm-hmm. July 13, eclipses opposite Pluto.
Yeah, there are several difficult lunations in a row.
Oh, it's like exactly opposite Pluto. So the new moon is at 20.
It is.
Capricorn on July 12th, and Pluto is at, or sorry, the new moon is at 20 Cancer, and Pluto is at 20 Capricorn.
Right. Now look at the full moon right before that, and you'll see it's tightly conjunct Saturn.
Mm-hmm. On that new moon you just mentioned, Chris, that's actually an eclipse too. It's a more partial eclipse, but that'll just add a little bit of juiciness. Oh, I hadn't spotted this one, Austin. Great point out.
Yeah, I spotted that on my second clicking through every day pass.
Your Saturn in Virgo attention to detail, aka obsession with tedious work, has been well rewarded.
Indeed.
So this is June 27th.
That's right on the station of Mars. It's like a day after Mars's station. Wow.
That's the Mars station too.
So yeah, even though we don't have, you know, we're saying at the beginning, there's not a lot of like exact outer planet aspects. There's some like heavy lunation stuff that's happening on top of some outer planet alignments that is pretty heavy and serious looking.
Yeah. If I have to pick what's going to be easy and hard, Q3 is the hardest by far.
Right. Okay. So that's
agreed.
That's where all the action.
Yeah, I think the only period I would totally. The only other month that I would maybe highlight would be April when we have the Mars Saturn co-presence, but the Q3 overall for sure.
Yeah, I would agree with as far as single months, April's up there.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
And then in this quarter, we've got Mars square Uranus again. That happens in August for the retrograde hit, and then Mars square Uranus in September when Mars is finally direct. So just adding all of that volatility. So this is a very volatile quarter, I guess. And that particular lunation we've been looking at, that end of July, the moon conjunct Mars at an eclipse, both on the south node. I mean, this has like cutting and volatility and combustibility written all over it. Austin, you had an interesting point about where this eclipse was visible. Is it this one or was it the earlier one?
The big lunar. The big lunar is sort of centered. I guess the center of visibility would be like, maybe a couple hundred miles south of the Persian Gulf, sort of. But people will be able to see it. Like if anyone lives in Middle East or India, like basically all of it's sort of centered on southern Eurasia. But you'll be able to see it in Africa. You'll be able to see it in Eastern Europe. I think all the way over to China. But kind of centered, Iran, India, Pakistan, kind of that area, if I'm remembering correctly. I might be off by 100 miles, but it's very visible because it's a total eclipse.
So that's interesting to have such a volatile eclipse visible in those parts of the world.
Right. And then it looks like by the time we get to August, on August 11th, we have our solar eclipse at 18 degrees of Leo. And that sort of caps off our little eclipse season there during July and August.
Yeah. And boy, after all those configurations.
Yes, that'll be the last eclipse.
We'll greet that with open arms. Like that's the easiest lunation for like a month and a half. Just a partial eclipse.
Yeah.
Right.
In Leo. Yeah. And it's going to be the last eclipse, I think, in Leo. Oh, it's the last eclipse we have with the nodes in Leo and Aquarius, even though we'll still have a little Leo or Aquarius action in early 2019. But this little one isn't there. No, that's okay. Yeah. But this, I agree with you, Austin. This is going to feel somewhat gentle relative to what's been going on in the months prior. Relative. It's still a fire.
It's only relatively gentle.
Relatively so.
What do y'all think about Mars moving back into Capricorn? Because Mars is actually going to be back in Capricorn for almost a month. It's got to be retrograde there for a while, then it's got to station direct and then make it out. And it'll be very slow. And that's going to feel very different than Mars in Aquarius retrograde. Please go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is basically mid-August to mid-September. It's Mars back in the sign of its exaltation, pretty close to its exaltation degree too, if I've got that correct. I think it's going to station at 28. I can never remember whether it's 26 or 28, but I know it's late cap. It cools it down. I will be welcoming that shift, I think, a little more. You know, I always worry when we've got a fire planet doing some difficult stuff in an air sign because, air feeds the fire, which can be exciting, but can feed the volatility. So the coolness, the calmness. But as you said, Austin, it's putting Mars back in the sign of Saturn. So that could re-trigger some of the challenges from April of 2018.
Yeah, I think
just temporarily and with that final sense of, yeah, do you agree on that piece?
Yeah, I think with Mars stationing direct in Capricorn, you know, after, I think there's going to be a lot of talk with Mars retrograde in Aquarius. I think there are going to be some big decisive power moves once Mars stations direct in Capricorn. There will be some courses of action which have been, you know, people have gone this way and that way about. But I think there are going to be, I think probably on like a geopolitical level, there'll probably be some power moves during that Mars, right around that Mars and Cap station. And in people's personal lives, it'll sort of be like, you know, you've talked it to death. Like, you know, are you going to, you know, what's the plan? Where are you going to make the move? I think a lot of people are going to make their move with that around that station or shortly thereafter.
Yeah. And it's almost
well,
with
that
it
makes
returning,
sense, doesn't it? The end of the retrograde.
Because it
go
comes
ahead. Go
to,
ahead, Kelly.
Sorry, Chris, you go. I was just going to say, yeah, just the idea of the end of the retrograde, that's when things happening, you know. And I think what you're saying, Austin, is that Mars back in the sign with Saturn and Pluto, that's when we see the plays coming out that people have been brewing.
Yeah, yeah. I have one historical precedent for it, and I kind of don't want to mention it, but I have to now, don't I?
Okay. Now that you've told us you have something, it's like saying, no, I know something you don't know.
So I guarantee this is not that rare a cycle. So there are other precedents, but the Mars stationing retrograde in Aquarius and then stationing direct in Cap was like literally the outbreak of World War II is the direct station in Cap. That's when Germany invades Poland. I know that's not going to happen this time, but I was looking at the timeline and there was all of this going back and forth and being like, oh, they kept delaying the attack because the, you know, the alliance with Italy wasn't solid and they weren't sure what Stalin thought. And so they had to get the things with the Russians. And then it's right around the direct station. They just, you know, they go for it. And that begins a rather horrendous storyline. I don't think that that's going to happen. There's nothing that suggests that that's going to happen. But, you know, that is a lot of like, I don't know, what do we do? And then that was a rather decisive move. And so anyway, that's a precedent. It's not the only one. It's just a very clear one.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, at the very least, even just from a personal standpoint, it's like that, like you were saying earlier in the year, Austin, that move of Mars into Capricorn begins such a heavy period with all three of those planets clustered in that sign. And it's like you think you're through with it for a period of time over the summer, but then it comes back and there's something that's left unfinished until Mars returns to that sign, stations there in that like final moment of power, and then eventually by later in the year goes forward again and departs from Capricorn finally. But it's like an interesting like opening salvo of whatever these broader themes are that are going to be building up over the next few years as Saturn gets closer and closer to Pluto and conjoining it later on in Capricorn.
Yeah, yeah. There's, I don't know, there's kind of, yeah, it's hard not to see some like big moves, whether it's like this country doing that or a person doing that. They're going to be power moves this year that sure. change landscapes, small and large.
Sure. All right. Well, I think that brings us, that's a good note to end quarter three on, which is our most tense and sort of troubling quarter. I think we all agree.
Yeah.
So that brings us then finally to quarter four and the last 3 months of the year. So, October, November, December of 2018. And there's pretty much three primary things about this one, but the one that it really opens up with, or one of the key ones, is the other major retrograde that we're having this year, which is a Venus retrograde, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what is going on with that? It looks like by the time we get to September and October, Venus is in Scorpio and it's slowing down, but then it stations already by like October 6th in Scorpio, right?
Yes, I think October 4th or 5th, it'll station retrograde around 10 Scorpio. And we're going to have that as the theme for this quarter. And one point I always like to make a mention of when people are thinking about Venus retrograde cycles, even though Venus does go retrograde every 18 months, it's the 8-year repetition of Venus retrograde back in the same sign that I think is a little more interesting or significant from a cyclical or a cycles perspective. So it was 8 years ago, late 2010, that we last had Venus retrograde in this early part of Scorpio. So that can be an interesting period to be tying back in when we come to this Venus retrograde in Scorpio in 2018.
Oh yeah, I remember that Venus retrograde. That's the 2010 one. Yep. And the 2002 one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. What do you remember about it, Chris?
I remember the 2002 one, though.
I have a happy story.
You have a happy story?
I wrote my very first astrological almanac, like the full book version, during that Venus retrograde.
Okay.
In 2010.
Fantastic. 2010 one, sorry. Yeah. Beautiful. And that would have been fifth house for you.
Yep.
Yeah. Nice.
I think the 2002 one for me was revisiting of like an old relationship very tumultuously. So that was my recollection of 2002 one.
I remember that story.
Okay. Excellent.
And that is a theme. That's a very common thing this with Venus retrograde.
That is a theme.
It
is. Yeah. Reconnecting with past loves. Ghosts from relationship past.
They rise from their graves to haunt you. And sometimes to say really nice things and deliver messages that allow for completion. One thing I'll say about Venus retrogrades is a lot of times you will get people's romantic past will reemerge. And again, a lot of times there's like a nice piece of closure in that. However, I do see people getting confused as to whether that past should be their present and future. They're like, well, if these people are coming back, I don't know, there's a bunch of weird coincidences. Maybe it's like weirdly fated. And then I see people trying, being like, well, maybe we should do this again. And then Venus goes direct and they're like, oh, no, we should definitely not do this again.
Right. That's why that didn't work out last time.
Oh, really? Okay.
Or no, that's like I'm saying story. that's the reminder sometimes of the Venus retrograde is the revisiting, but the revisiting can sometimes be good, but other times it can just reinforce what you already knew at one point, but then maybe forgot or got fuzzy on the details.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it can just be like, you did get it, right? Do you have to do this again? But what I would say is, don't believe or disbelieve, relationships during Venus retrograde. Let things be ambivalent. Be like, that's interesting. This person's back in contact with me. Let me explore that. Don't give it a name or a structure until Venus is direct, if you don't have to. It's much easier to just let it sort itself out. And you can participate in that. You don't have to be avoidant. You can participate in that without being like, yes, we were supposed to be together forever. That's exactly why this is happening. I'm leaving my wife or husband, right? You just kind of let it sort itself out and watch before making judgments.
Well, and look at the alignments on this one. It's funny because Venus is stationing there in early October at like 10 degrees of Scorpio, but Mars is just getting back to its shadow point, the point that it went retrograde at earlier in the year. So it's at 8 Aquarius around that time, and it actually sneaks up on and then squares Venus from about 9-10 degrees of Aquarius to about 10 degrees of Scorpio once Venus is stationed retrograde. And then the other funny thing about this retrograde cycle of Venus and Scorpio is that it goes back to early Scorpio and conjoins the sun. So we have a Sun-Venus conjunction, like one of the ones we saw earlier this year in Capricorn, except this one is opposing Uranus at the same time because Uranus is still at 0 degrees of Taurus. So you get a Venus-Uranus opposition basically right around the time of the Sun-Venus Kazemi.
And I'm going to interrupt you here, Chris. So back that up a few days and notice that there's a full moon in Taurus, like right on Uranus. I believe. Yep, there it is. Yeah. So the full moon in Taurus is right on top of Uranus while Venus and the Sun are conjoining in Scorpio. So we have another lunation, like just touching it off.
Yeah. And usually, Austin, we love this Taurus full moon, but it's going to be a very different type of Taurus.
I know,
full moon,
dude. Uranus is going to be ruining all of my like happy, stabilizing moon in Taurus elections.
Right.
All about
how am I supposed to do lunar magic?
And the other point, the other point too, that's Austin. I think you mentioned this in our pre-show chitter chatter, is that the first decan, I guess, first 10 or 11 degrees of the fixed signs are very active with these station retrograde degrees of Venus and Mars and some of these lunations. So particularly if you do have significant chart points or key planets in your chart in the early parts of the fixed signs, because Chris, you made a really good point there. Venus is hitting her station with Mars just coming out of his shadow period. And that's really the sort of the first 10 days of October where Venus and Mars will both be around that 10 degrees, not for the first time and not for the last time, but certainly very active. And that's a great lunation to point out. I'm so disappointed.
Yeah. Well, and that's a really good example because it shows, you know, otherwise what you would normally think is a relatively nice and stable and sort of quiet lunation of like the moon going through Taurus where it's exalted and it's a stable sort of earth sign, a fixed earth sign. But once you get like a planet like Uranus going through there and you have like every lunation having to take that energy from Uranus into account, that's a tremendously destabilizing and sort of upsetting influence that you otherwise normally wouldn't experience there. So it's bringing really something new to the table in that first trek of like Uranus going through those early degrees of Taurus this year is going to be a really interesting preview of what most of the next decade is going to be about. And I'd really recommend people pay close attention to what house Uranus goes into in your chart, especially what whole sign house it goes into, in order to see a preview this year of some major shifts and some major changes that are going to be occurring in that area of your life over the course of the next decade.
Yeah, you know, 100% agree. And also, you know, we've kind of said this several times, I'm going to say it again. So this preview period, this like initial ingress of Uranus into Taurus, this is going to be a rather dramatic trailer for the movie to come because we have it configured to both the Mars and the Venus retrogrades. Mars squares it three times. Venus opposes it three times. And so this will probably be an unsubtle trailer for the movie.
Definitely.
Totally. And when we say the idea of, you know, a paradigm shift or a big collective shift, Austin, you just gave a great example when you were talking about the full moon in Taurus and the Uranus involvement. Every full moon in Taurus that we have in the next 8 years, it may not be as close or as tight by degree, but we're going to at least have that co-presence of Uranus in Taurus. So we don't have any more.
It's going to change all of your elections.
All of your elections, all your, as you said, your magical work. I mean, that a cliche or typically stable full moon in Taurus is just not available for the next 8 years.
I mean, maybe like separated by 20 degrees and applying to a benefic and get away with it. But, you know, yeah, it's going to be there the whole time. And it's going to show up in, you know, it's going to show up in all of the, it's going to start showing up in people's solar return charts and their lunar return charts. And it's just going to get encoded into all of these, you know, these sub charts that we use.
Right.
And Chris, you've moved the chart onto the happiness transit.
Eventually, you know,
I don't know if we can call it that.
Since we were talking about the Venus retrograde, I just wanted to bookend that with, you know, Venus does eventually station direct at 25 degrees of Libra towards the middle of November, and that's kind of interesting because it's right around the same time that Mercury, which had been retrograde for a few weeks, Mercury stations retrograde for a few weeks at that point. And Jupiter has also just switched signs and moved from Scorpio into Sagittarius, which is probably a good segue to talk about that as one of the last major, you know, transits that's occurring towards the later part of this year is Jupiter leaving Scorpio and moving into its home sign of Sagittarius.
So on that note, I want to jump in and just say one last thing about the Venus and Mars retrogrades, which I think is going to tie nicely into what we're into Jupiter, which is that both Venus's retrograde, which begins in Scorpio, and Mars retrograde, which begins in Aquarius, they start with those planets in signs that are either inimical to the planet's significations or just no help. You know, Mars doesn't, the only type of essential dignity that Mars has in Aquarius is a single bound. It's just, Aquarius is not Marsy. And, you know, Venus will start her retrograde in Scorpio, which is the traditional detriment of Venus. But both of these retrogrades end with their direct stations in signs where they're very much at home and very powerful, right? Venus stations direct in Libra. You know, Venus is like, oh, thank God, I'm back in Libra. This is how it's supposed to be, right? And Mars gets back to Capricorn. He's like, all right, no more confusion, right? I know what to do. And that sort of things, maybe I'm trying to be positive here. I know I'm not good at being positive, but I'm trying. Is the like, you know, that
you've done a great job today.
Thank
Austin.
You. But like, you know, like literally this is putting things back where they're supposed to be. And there may be that as a theme, like getting Mars back where it's supposed to be, getting Venus, you know, your Venusian side of your life back to where it's supposed to be and to be able to work from there. And then we get that beautiful ingress of Jupiter into Sag.
Yes, that's a really good point, Austin. And it's one of the reasons that I know we have Mercury retrograde for half the month in November 2018. And even though Venus is direct for the first half, she's back in her home. Like she's back home. So if you're going to be retrograde, at least do it in comfortable territory. So November is definitely, you know, at least do it in a house where you've got access to everything. You can play your favorite music or the fridge is stocked with your yummiest food, whatever it happens to be. I like November. I'm happy for Jupiter moving to Sag. I remember personally 12 years ago when Jupiter was in Sag, and that was a lovely time for me, but I'm biased towards Jupiter because I have a very strong Jupiter chart. But Jupiter in its home sign, two benefics coming into dignity. Venus will also station direct near the fixed star Speaker or Spica, which I think has some positive offerings to share as well. So I think you made some good points, and I do like this period generally.
Yeah, definitely. That shift of Jupiter into Scorpio seems like a nice sort of bit of optimism towards the end of the year. And then you get like a Sun-Jupiter conjunction right after that in Sagittarius. I mean, there's a little bit of tension because it's like Mars has just ingressed into Pisces and starts squaring all of that at the same time, which is a little unfortunate, but at least there is...
It's a little annoying.
It's a little annoying, but at least there is some shift towards the end of the year, which at least in the long term over the next 12 months with Jupiter in Sag gives us some optimism for what lies in the future. So I think that's the last thing, of course. The only other thing was Uranus, of course, going back into Aries in the later part of the year, just as one last sort of, check to see if you got what that was all about and whatever house that's been transiting through in your chart over the course of the past 7 years since the early 2010s or 2010s.
Yeah, I think it's November 6th that Uranus goes back into Aries, and it will be in Aries until early March. So December, January, February. So just a few months.
One of the themes I wanted to mention for Uranus going through the houses, you know, we've talked a lot about the sort of disruptive quality of Uranus, but there's also this quality of like innovation and renovation that's always a good theme, you know, to focus on as well. And that's been... In looking back on what my Uranus going through Aries experience has been like, a large part of that was going through my third whole sign house. And I actually started doing this podcast and started doing podcasting not too long after Uranus went into Aries. And so it's been interesting that a large part of like Uranus going through my third house has been, you know, finding new and innovative ways to use technology in order to communicate. And then my growth process as I've learned how to do that over the course of the past half decade or so.
Yeah. I one of the positive significations I see Uranus as having by transit is supercharging an area. And a lot of times that area can't hold the charge. You will blow fuses. But it, Uranus does try to supercharge things. It's just that the circuitry might not be able to hold it. And also, you know, when I talk to people about transits they're having, when Uranus goes through a house, you end up just getting kind of itchy and bored and more willing to experiment and try new things. And sometimes that can be a problem, but it can also be really useful. And it's also really useful to just be like, yeah, it's okay that I'm itchy and bored and feeling a little rebellious and maybe want to change things up. Like that's what Uranus transits feel like. And that maybe that's leading to, you know, that's going to be a change in 6 months or a year. And you're just kind of like, you're starting to feel it internally. And that's, you know, there is sort of like, Kelly, you at the very beginning, you said something about Uranus having a hot quality if we're looking at qualities. And I agree with that because Uranus catalyzes and it, you know, it gets people moving. They want to change things. They want to do this. They want to do that. You know, it's not, it's, you know, to heat things up and get them moving often quite quickly is a, you know, it's a quality of fire, or it's a fiery quality.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, to put what you just said then, Austin, and what Chris said earlier around the idea that the Taurus area of our charts, and our lives is an area where we tend to prefer consistency and stability and routine and repetition. So whether it's discomfort or just this really unusual quality coming into a part of our charts and lives, you know, the idea of Uranus is now going to stir the Taurus pot, and it is going to bring heat and stimulation and activation into an area of life that is sometimes stagnant. Now, in the Taurus part of our chart, that stagnancy can work to our favor. It can mean that we're consistent or reliable around that area of our life. But it might also mean that we get stuck in a rut, or that that area of life has become a little bit boring or a little bit dated and tired. And Uranus will certainly be freshening things. I think you mentioned the word renovation, Chris. Yeah, it's time to spruce things up here. And you don't yet know exactly what the sprucing up will need to look like, but you're going to get a few glimpses and a few tastes of that throughout 2018 for sure.
So something you said triggered an insight, or what I hope is an insight. It's at least a thought. But like Taurus being a place where you can get too comfortable, right? Like that makes a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, it's so nice. And there's cookies and, you know, there's the couch and there's some fried snacks. And, you know, Uranus can break up some of that. What is Nietzsche has a phrase, uses a wretched contentment, where you've like let yourself get comfortable with something less than what you're capable of.
Yes.
I like that. That's a good keyword for that, wretched contentment. And yeah, the breaking of that, or the shattering of some of that over the course of the next, you know, half a decade as Uranus goes into that sign, and this year being a preview of what a lot of that's going to be about.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had one question here around Saturn trine Uranus, and a comment saying that even if it's not exact, Saturn trine Uranus by sign is often very innovative without total disruption. And it's probably worth a mention that Saturn trine Uranus, mid-August to mid-September 2018, they will actually be trine by degree, but not trine by minute. So we're getting very Virgo about this trine not being exact, which it is technically not exact, but it is pretty damn close. So I think maybe just as a quick, you know, side note or footnote to mention that there will be some of that innovation, and, you know, maybe it's productive disruption potentially. I don't know, Austin, you've got some chuckles there, or Chris. Oh, I wonder what you guys have any, if you guys have any thoughts about this.
Oh, I was just flashing on what I know was a shared Saturn Virgo moment between us. I was like looking at that conjunction, and I'm like clicking by hour and by day to see if it perfects or not. I was like, oh, they're both there. Oh.
Yep, I know. I was like, how close? This is so damn close. Yeah. But it does not become exact. Yeah.
Right. And the last thing I wanted to mention here that I just have in the animated chart is I took it all the way to December 31st, which is almost a year from now. And it looks like we end 2018, the very end, the last day of next year, with just about a almost a degree off a Sun-Saturn conjunction that will occur at around 11 degrees of Capricorn. It looks like at the very, very beginning of January. But it's interesting that, you know, we just had in the past week or two here the ingress of Saturn into Capricorn and the first conjunction of the Sun with Saturn. So the very first opening Sun-Saturn conjunction or Kazemi, and we will close the following year, 2018, with the same conjunction. So it will be an interesting like revisiting and sort of reflection point of what the first year of Saturn in Capricorn has been all about at that point.
Totally. And I'll just make a quick, slightly patriotic mention here of my home country, Australia, which was the Federation Chart of Australia, the January 1st, 1901 chart includes a Sun-Saturn conjunction in Capricorn, actually very close to these degrees here. So I think leadership issues and leadership planning and succession planning, et cetera, in Australia over this next few years with Saturn in Capricorn, which is a Saturn return sign for Australia, is just going to be interesting to watch. And this this is interesting because Australia as a country, that Federation chart also has Jupiter in Sag. So the recurrence of those two returns at the end of 2018 for Australia as a country. So that's just a little aside there. But this is a great chart to close our year ahead forecast on, Chris.
Yeah, I think that's, I think we've covered quite a bit here. I'm actually surprised at how much we got through. I didn't think we were going to get through it all, but it looks like we did, and we've come to the end of 2018. So it's kind of weird looking that far into the future. You know, it's late December 2017 right now, and we're already looking at what transits are going to be like 12 months from now. And I guess we opened with that discussion at the beginning of this podcast, this weird thing that astrologers do where they're always constantly looking very far into the future and trying to anticipate and seeing the outlines of what the future holds. And it's an interesting exercise that all of us do to a greater or lesser extent, but I think it's an important process, and it's always fun doing these episodes with you guys because I think it helps to really sharpen one's skills in this like almost like martial arts type way of just like repetition of looking at transits and anticipating and, you know, predicting or forecasting, but then also seeing how that turned out and calibrating your understanding of astrology accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So I guess we will see then how the next year goes, and we'll revisit this episode in 12 months and see if some of those, you know, key turning points during the course of the year, how important they ended up being, like that, you know, that lunar eclipse that takes place over the summer with Mars and Uranus and everything that we were so focused on, or the Uranus ingress into Taurus and other types of events like that.
Yeah, definitely. So Kelly, Chris, you get, either of y'all have sort of advice or parting words? Like, so how do you do that? That's the obstacle course, or, you know, however you want to put it. I personally, and this might be not generalizable, but it might be generalizable, I really feel like if you work with Saturn in Capricorn, Saturn in Capricorn will work for you. It's the only planet that's in dignity all year. How should we put this? Think long term. You know, stay steady in your movement towards where you want to be by the time Saturn is done with Capricorn. Like, think of this as year one of three. And so it's a 3-year plan, right? And what do you want to have accomplished by the time you get done? And then, you know, cut that into 3 years and then cut that into 4 quarters. And you know what? If there's a, you know, big pain in the ass one of those quarters, it's okay. You still got, you know, there's still a lot of quarters between you and where you plan to be by the time Saturn exits Capricorn. And I feel like that can be really stabilizing in the midst of some not so stabilizing configurations.
Yeah, I agree, Austin. I think the message is definitely long-term, 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 that what you're doing now is not going to bear fruit immediately. And you probably shouldn't expect it to, that you really want to think, I'm doing something now that I'm going to benefit from years down the track, whether it's at the end of the 3-year cycle. Or one thing for me personally is I've just started to get really inspired about retirement planning. So I'm like, I'm putting this money away and I'm not going to see it for 20 years necessarily. But to me, that's an incredibly Saturn in Capricorn thing, is that idea of short-term pain for long-term gain. you know, what can you do today that offers you a gift in the future or that provides you protection and security in the future? Because I think those words, protection, security, safety, whether it's financial or otherwise, are huge Saturnian and Capricorn words. So that's what I would say as parting words for that piece. The other very brief thing I would say, based on the idea that we're getting that dipping our toes into Uranus in Taurus for 2018, be open to or embrace change in areas of life that you're normally very rigid or that you've become a little complacent or a little too comfortable. Because I think that sort of summarizes what we said around the Uranus in Taurus bit. So that would be my sort of short summary of our last couple of hours.
I think that's very nice. I like that a lot.
Yeah. And I like that idea of just taking the first few steps of that slow process of starting to climb the mountain. And even though it's going to take a long time or it's going to take a while before you reach the summit of that, just knowing that there is a summit and that you have to start somewhere by taking those first few steps to start walking upwards.
Yeah.
Right. And that nobody climbs mountains with jetpacks. Like if you try to climb super fast, you get to fall back down to the starting point super fast. And so just to tie this into something at the very beginning, you know, I mentioned Saturn and Capricorn, I've been noticing Saturn and Capricorn already, giving credit where credit is due, where it's been earned. And so, you know, what are you going to have be one of those people by the end of Saturn's time in Capricorn, right? Even if you're a grasshopper and not an ant right now, like what will you, you know, set yourself up to be able to look back at 2018 and 2019 from the end of 2020 and be like, yep, I got here. I got, you know, I got that degree. I got the job I wanted. I put the money away. I did, you know, I became skillful in an art that I was just a beginner at a couple years ago, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Be that person in 3 years that gets credit because it's due.
Definitely. All right. Well, I think that's a good note to end on. That's a nice optimistic while still, you know, realistic or like pragmatic note to end on. And I think that is in keeping with and appropriate with our new found Saturn and Capricorn transit. So thanks, guys, for joining me for this. Thanks to our patrons who are joining us for the live recording of this episode in the audience. And yeah, I can't believe we made it to the end of 2017. It's been a lot of fun doing these yearly forecast episodes with you guys every month. We've done 12 of them now over the past year. And, you know, we've done a few dozen over the past few years, but I'm looking forward to revisiting some of these themes again in more detail on each of the monthly forecast episodes over the course of the next 12 months. So, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be really nice to do the blow by blow and watch how it plays out and get those nuances you can only get when you actually see it happen. That'll be great.
Yeah, once we're into it.
Definitely. All right. Well, people then can find out more information about Austin on his website at austincopic.com, more information about Kelly at kellysastrology.com, and you can find out more information about the podcast at theastrologypodcast.com. So yeah, thanks everyone for listening. We appreciate you, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.